And Michael Pare looks exactly like Willem Dafoe.
Except Willem Dafoe is the villain.
Oh, that's probably why he looks like Willem Dafoe then.
Yeah, because it is Willem Dafoe, you idiot.
Geek Juice Radio.
Centipede was my joint.
What was Biafra's first name in that movie? Which is the Jello?
All the stoners are giggling at it.
Visit our website at www.geekjuicemedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Geek Juice Radio. Tonight, we've got no Charlie to do our opening. Sad. Me, I'm Alex Jowski. Kevin?
I'm still Kevin Daly. I haven't changed. Well, not much anyway.
And we got...
I'm Dustin Kidd.
Tonight, just a simple casual topic, nothing special tonight. We're just going to talk about our different tastes in music.
Oh, I thought we were going to have, like, a whole political show and go into, like, debates and all that kind of stuff.
We don't do no politics here.
Canadian Parliament?
Who will control the tree blood of Canada? That's all politics is here. Hockey and who controls the tree blood.
Who can bring the Leafs back to prominence?
That's all we care about.
Go Leafs!
So, Dustin, other than Rush, what music is there in Canada?
My wife goes the Biebs.
Oh yeah, Justin Bieber.
We got Justin Bieber. There's Kim Mitchell.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh really? Max Webster.
Webster from Webster?
No, Max Webster.
We've got Celine Dion.
Oh God. No, okay. There are some good bands here. I don't know if you've heard of him, Devin Townsend.
I have, but I'm not super familiar.
Yeah, he got his start out, he sent a demo tape to a record label, and it was the record label that Steve Vai was on, and Steve Vai heard his demo tape, and he's like, I gotta get this guy singing on my next album. So he did.
Steve Vai can't sing.
So yeah, he sang on Steve Vai's album.
The one where he plays guitar, right?
Yeah, something like that. No, it was Sex and Religion. Yeah, he sang on that album. And then, like, right after that, he got his kick off of with his solo stuff. And then, later on, got into Strapping Young Lad. And then, he's done with Strapping Young Lad now, and he's continuing on with his solo stuff. So.
Okay. I'm familiar with Strapping Young Lad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'd definitely say, like, check out his solo stuff. It's really cool. Really, like, kind of experimental, kind of heavy rock, metal. It's all over the place. He's got some nice acoustic stuff, like light stuff, but like really heavy stuff also. One of my favorite bands, Skinny Puppy. They're from Vancouver also.
I'm not a fan of Skinny Puppy. My ex was.
I love Skinny Puppy.
Their music was in the movie Suburbia, which she watched all the time, and she'd just get all Twitter pages. She's like, listen, they're playing Skinny Puppy.
Skinny Puppy is one of my favorite bands. They're industrial. They were a big part of the sound of industrial music back in like the 80s and that kind of stuff with like Ministry, Nine Inch Nails, that kind of stuff. Skinny Puppy was there before Nine Inch Nails. And
post first album Ministry that was new with Al doing a fake English accent, which is an awesome album, by the way.
No, yeah, it's still a great album.
You would never recognize it as Ministry if you didn't know.
Yeah, there was some rumors that he was going to go back and make an album in that style, but I doubt he's going to because he just released a new Ministry album and it was just like the last one. And yeah, but Skinny Puppy, they've been a big influence throughout the years and that kind of stuff, and like one of my favorite bands, and they really made a big impact with the industrial kind of sound and stuff. They've done like so many other projects like Kevin Key and Niveko Ogre. They've done so many different projects on their own and that kind of stuff. Like Niveko has Ogre, which is another band, which is one of my favorite bands. And then Kevin Key has all these experimental electronic bands like Download, Plateau, Banana Sloth, like all this different stuff. So that's more look into Canadian music. I think the band Toronto is Canadian. I'm not sure.
Well, they're named after Toronto.
No, I know. I'm kidding.
I have a Toronto-based band that I'm actually really fond of. Billy Talent. Are you familiar with them, Dustin?
I wish I wasn't.
I actually really like them.
I used to like them. I saw them at 2006 Vans Warped Tour, and I'm sorry, but that was like one of the worst performances I've ever experienced.
So I've never seen them live, but
yeah, just stick to their album stuff if so you like that.
Because Billy Talent One is a great album.
I need to ask what I missed.
We're talking about our taste in music, and we started with Dustin talking about what music is in Canada other than Rush.
Yeah,
I was just gonna say you guys have more than Rush.
Yeah, surprisingly.
Well, apparently this band Toronto is like the knockoff version of Kansas or Boston.
More polite.
Another band that's Canadian is Annihilator, and they were like a speed metal thrash metal band.
Oh, the one Alice in Fear or something like that.
Oh, no. Or wait.
Yeah, it was something Alice.
Oh yeah, that was a good song.
I remember that album from like 89, 90, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that was Alice in Hell.
Alice in Hell, that's, I just remember, Listen Hell.
Yeah.
Is the way they sung it.
And like the guitar player, what's his name? He was badass. And then, but then also the drummer, Mike Mangini, he holds the world record for fastest drumming at the moment. Like beats per minute. It's crazy. Like, you can look up a video of it, and he holds the world record for that right now. He's pretty insane when it comes to drumming.
I didn't know there were world records in Canada, other than coldest inhabitable place.
Well, Canada is in the world, so it's sort of part of when there's records set, it's kind of, it's like better than any other place in the world, it would go in the world record.
See, Alex, I've heard this weird thing about Canada. Americans go up there to shoot TV shows and shit, so it can't be all backwards, right?
Yeah, but they do that so it's cheaper, Josh.
Yeah, because you guys don't know the value of a dollar.
I know the value of a Canadian dollar.
And isn't your money called loonies anyway?
Yes, and it has a picture of a loon on it. And then we have toonies, which has polar bears on it.
And then you got poutines, which is the real currency.
I think you guys got the gayest money outside of South America.
Timbits are the currency.
Yeah, that's the secret currency. Also, we have currency where if you find a used hockey puck somewhere in like a snowbank or something, that's worth about $10 American.
A used hockey puck. You are now Prime Minister of Canada.
If it was game used by the Leafs, $50.
Oh man, you found a puck? Game on!
Well, or you could be a hockey puck, you could be Don Rickles from that Norm Macdonald movie.
Incidentally, Norm Macdonald, Canadian.
Shatner, Canadian. I think Leonard Nimoy is. Isn't Leonard Nimoy Canadian too?
No, I don't think so. But
I think Shatner is.
Leslie Nielsen is.
Really?
Or was.
Michael J. Fox.
I'm sure his corpse is still Canadian.
Well, yeah.
James Cameron, you guys do have James Cameron.
Yep.
Although I think he's an American now, but yeah.
Jim Carrey was also.
Uwe Boll has dual citizenship with Germany and Canada.
It's ironic that he chose Canada instead of the U.S.
Because he does a lot of filming there. He's like, what's the hell? Might as well be
again.
A citizen.
It's cheap. A lot of productions when they want to film cheap, they'll film here in Hamilton, Toronto, because it's a lot cheaper here. Like, you can pass off Toronto as Chicago or, yeah. Like,
except the one I wasn't... You guys familiar with the old Spencer for Hire TV show, Dustin?
I'm not, no.
It was Avery Brooks and Robert Urich, started in 1987.
No, not
had Avery Brooks in it?
Avery Brooks was Hawk. Basically, he looked like what Captain Sisko looked like in the last three seasons, but he was a badass street-kicking motherfucker.
And watch this show.
Oh, yo.
It has Avery Brooks in it.
Avery Brooks stole every scene in Spencer for Hire he was in. Every single scene. But the show for the three seasons, it was shot in Boston where it took place. Well, then after they got canceled, Lifetime, then a still relatively new network, picked, because the reruns were doing amazing on Lifetime. So they picked the show up. And they brought it back for four TV movies, essentially an eight-episode fourth season. But Lifetime, being a cable net, they shot it in Canada and called it Boston. Let's just say Canada cannot pass for Boston, Dustin. You could tell, this isn't Boston anymore. This is Toronto.
Well, I had that issue with X-Files. I think I mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
L.A.
And
this isn't Vancouver anymore.
Yeah. Another thing, in the Resident Evil 2 movie, and that movie's a piece of shit.
Best one that they've made so far, though.
Well, yeah.
I like
saying much.
They filmed it in Toronto, and like the scene where that final fight takes place, and like where she runs down the building, that's the Toronto City Hall. But one of the funny things is, okay, it's supposed to be Raccoon City. It's supposed to be an American city. In the background of one of the shots, you can clearly see a CIBC, which is a Canadian bank.
Is it any worse than the Jackie Chan Rumble in the Bronx, where you can see all the mountains because it was shot in Canada? Yeah, the Bronx has mountains, right?
Really, really tall ones.
It's like, yeah, because the Bronx only has mountains of cocaine. That's the only mountains in the Bronx.
We're kind of getting off topic here. We should probably wander back into music.
Dustin, have you ever been on this show before? Off topic is all we
do.
No,
I know.
Moving on. So, Josh, what's your favorite types of music?
See, I can't really nail myself down to a specific genre. I love classic rock. I love heavy metal. I love punk. I love hardcore. I love just rock and roll. I can narrow down more what music I don't like. Rap, polka, country, like that. I can't.
How do you not like
that?
Polka being from Wisconsin? That's
you know what? That's racist, Daly. That's racist.
Well, Alex, that's a pretty hard question. I really don't like that question personally. Like when people say, "Oh, what's your favorite band?" or like, "What's your favorite music?" What kind of music you listen to? And it's like I can't really narrow it down.
It's me either, but it's a question that f**ks me over because I'll be like, "Oh, I like all types of music." Oh, awesome. You like LMFAO? No. But you said you liked all types.
No, that's not music, though.
Yeah.
See, okay, I'm talking more like I listen to the Dead Kennedys, and I also listen to Meatloaf and Motley Crue and Ted Nugent and the Divinyls. Kind of all over the map there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is all over the map. I love that.
Yeah, I'm really all over the place with my music selection also. Like, I listen to all kinds of stuff.
There are types of music that I don't like, but if they're on the radio, I don't find myself running to turn the dial. Like, hair metal. I'm not a hair metal fan, but...
Well, except for the women.
Well, I love metal chicks. Metal chicks are awesome. I've got a fetish for metal chicks. I married a metal chick. Metal chicks are awesome. But my wife's glaring at me right now. You were a metal chick. You were. But... There's like that type of hair metal. Sometimes it just kind of goes, oh, I remember having to sit through this on Headbangers Ball until they played the Megadeth video. Oh, I remember this. It's kind of nostalgic, even though it's not music I actually want to listen to.
Mm.
I was never into hair metal. Or those, remember you'd see those, that Power Ballads CD for sale. On
oh, like jock rock stuff.
No, the Power Ballads was like, well, it was, sometimes she cries.
Okay, so like Bon Jovi kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi and White Warren Lion. And White Lion and that kind of real pissy shit. And then you'd have bands like MOD and Laz Rocket just making fun of them hardcore. The only one that could pull off a power ballad and not come across like they had been feminized was Guns N' Roses. Guns N' Roses power ballads? Still had power behind them, didn't they?
What would be a good Guns N' Roses power ballad? Because I can't think of
November Rain.
November Rain. Patience.
Well, I don't personally like Guns N' Roses. Like
what? You don't
I used
like
to.
Guns N'
Roses? I used to. I grew up.
I used
with them,
to. Right? Yeah.
Like I dug them a lot.
Appetite for Destruction, Lies, and the User Illusions are absolutely amazing, Dustin.
I know.
The only good thing that got me was a free Dr. Pepper.
I mean, I was into them in high school and loved Use Your Illusion albums. But, you know, after a long time of nothing from them and like you can only listen to that so much.
17 years.
How long?
Seven, 17 years, unless you count the one new song they did for the End of Days soundtrack.
Well, there was the Spaghetti Incident.
The Spaghetti Incident was cover songs.
Yeah,
it was all cover songs from the punk era. And I liked a few of them. I'm a huge Misfits fan. They absolutely destroyed Attitude, and they absolutely destroyed a couple of other songs on there that I just went, oh, Axel, just stop.
One thing I want to know, Misfits, which era?
Now, are you just including Michael Graves and Glenn Danzig, or are you including
only between them two
as singer? Because I don't like the post Graves era.
No, I don't like that either.
But I honestly would give it a toss up between Graves and Danzig. I think there are incredibly powerful songs on both sides. I don't think I'd be able to pick one over the other, even though Michael Graves
made
two albums with them. They were two damn good albums.
No, yeah, yeah, I agree. Like, for me personally, I'd have to go with Graves because just like, but it's that slight, tiny, tiny bit more. Just Graves singing and everything, and like that kind of what he brings to the band and the sound that they had at that time. It was.
Dustin, did you ever see him on The Daily Show?
Actually, yeah, I did.
For those that don't know, he was in full makeup and he was in one of their comedy segments of what a punk rock Republican looks like. It was really damn funny, actually. And it was Michael Graves of the Misfits.
Huh. Interesting.
It would be Dexter Holland from The Offspring.
I think you can find the clip on YouTube because the Misfits have a big follow. So it's actually quite a funny clip from The Daily Show. But yeah, Dustin, I don't think I'd be able to really make a choice.
It's a really tough choice.
I love things like... I saw the Graves era Misfits. I wasn't old enough by the time they broke up in 82. I was f***ing 7, so I never saw the Danzig era Misfits, but I saw Graves era Misfits live 3 times, and they disappointed. All 3 times, they kicked ass.
Nice.
You know, Kevin...
But, Kevin, you brought up The Offspring. Have you heard, like, their latest song?
No. I haven't listened to them since... Well, I own Americana. But...
Yeah, Americana I like.
Mm-hmm.
And Conspiracy of One is okay. I'm actually Ixnay on the Hombre is my favorite Offspring album. My first album I ever bought though was Smash, so I'm quite partial to the Offspring, even though they kind of suck now.
especially after this last song. If you've heard it, it sounds like a Miley Cyrus song.
No, I have not.
I kid you not.
I don't know why he even makes music. He likes producing and running a record label more than he likes making music. So I don't even know why they bother still making albums. But
well, you kind of got to answer the same question about, or ask the same question about Axl Rose. Have you seen that Jabba the Hutt motherfucker lately?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, I could imagine now.
No, you need to go Google image him right now. A current photo of Axl Rose. He's got a handlebar mustache. He weighs like 350 pounds. I'm not exaggerating. He's got cornrows in his hair. Okay. I mean, he looks like a 1990 parody of what Axl Rose would look like in 20 years.
Oh,
and
I'm looking at it now. I like the hat he's got in this picture.
But yeah, he's
bigger than me. That's not good.
He's a Jabba the Hutt mother. And he still gets there's a YouTube video, if you can find it while we're talking, of him actually being so uncoordinated he falls off stage. He's singing and he just keeps walking and falls right into the audience and then gets all pissed when they start laughing and throws his microphone and walks away.
That sounds like Axl Rose at every show, though, getting pissed and walking away.
Yeah, I think he actually walked out of more shows than he ever completed.
Like,
but that's just Axl.
I have a friend that never got to see Guns N' Roses live. I mean,
I never got to see him in their prime. I really regret that.
He went to about 10 different Guns N' Roses shows, but all they consisted of was Axl Rose going up there saying "f*** this" and then Slash playing guitar for 45 minutes by himself.
Oh man. I've heard so many experiences like from people going to my one friend, his dad went to a Guns N' Roses concert back in the day, and this is around the time when Axl Rose was being all like pissy and piece of shit and everything. Yeah. And basically, they had the opening band play, waited 2 hours for Axl Rose to show up because he was still at the hotel, like, and he did not want to go. Finally gets there. They play the show. He only plays half the set and then walks off, and then that's it. And no refund or anything. Like,
well, and Dustin, don't you remember the deaths caused up in Canada by you guys at the Guns N' Roses show? Where I think Metallica was opening for them at that time. Metallica played their set, and Axl's in like 2-3 songs in, some guy was taking photographs, and security wasn't stopping him. So Axl jumped into the audience, took the camera from the guy, started punching him, and then since security here is so f***ed, I'm leaving, and left, and a riot erupted. So here he is, talking to MTV News with a cigarette holder and a bottle of wine, and he's all just, oh yeah, you know, it's really great being a rock star, and there's a riot going on a few hundred feet away that resulted in like 5 deaths. And it's that is everything that was wrong with the hedonistic rock star era. That's the Axl Rose that probably is the true man. And that was in Canada, so you had to have heard about that. I mean, you guys only got like what, a couple hundred people in your country?
Yes.
Nowadays, riots start when people say Axl Rose is going to sing.
Yeah, they riot to get him to shut the fuck up.
They're like, what? We don't want no Axl Rose singing. We came here to see Justin Bieber.
Well, okay, if you guys are Dead Kennedys fans, what do you guys think about the, I don't have any other way to put it, the scumbag tactics that the new Dead Kennedys tried to pull a couple of years ago?
The new Dead Kennedys?
Yeah, okay, remember child actor Brandon Cruz, C-R-U-Z?
Yep.
He was on like Kung Fu and Family Ties and stuff. He was a child actor in the late 70s and early 80s. He's now their singer. Well, they announced, hey, the Dead Kennedys are reforming. And yes, it's 3 of the guys, but not Jello. They declined to put any of that on the advertising. So yeah, people are buying all their tickets, and they're like, yeah, who in the f*** is that guy?
Yeah, I know someone who knows someone who went to one of those shows, and they were pissed. Yeah. Like, no doubt, they did not advertise it at all. And they're
it got so bad that they have to start putting on the lineup now. Yeah. So people don't, because like the concert promoters won't take them anymore unless they say Jell-O is not part of the band.
Mm-hmm.
I've known that Jell-O is not part of the Dead Kennedys forever now, and I wouldn't go see it without him, so.
Well, Jell-O's been doing a lot of other stuff, like way better stuff.
Like getting his ass beat at Gilman in Berkeley? I know it was a long time ago, but still.
I was going to say, Dad, what is that? Are you going back to the 90s, Kevin?
Look, I went to school in Berkeley, so.
I'm just like, that was like late 90s that happened.
But yeah, he's doing a lot of motivational speakings and that kind of stuff, public speakings and everything. And
it was I actually first bought his spoken word album, one of them, because I saw this CD that said Jell-O Biafra, and I'm like, I love the Dead Kennedys. I didn't know he was doing his own solo work. Bought it, and it was him talking about real interesting stuff for like
hours. He's a really educated guy. Smart.
I've got all of his spoken word albums. He stopped putting them out for a while, but see, Jell-O is one of those weird ones. Do you guys know any of his non-Dead Kennedy bands? Like all the stuff he did with Mojo Nixon and No Means No and Audacity of Hope and Tumor Circus. And I mean, I think one of my favorites is his collaboration with DOA with the 14-minute Full Metal Jackoff song. I love that. And then he recorded a song called Meat Hook Up My Rectum, written by Clive Barker.
Another band that
he also
did was
the intro to Ixnay on the Ombre for the Offspring.
He did an album with the Melvins called Siege Howdy, and the band was just Jell-O Biafra with the Melvins. That was a great album.
Didn't he cover Alice Cooper's Halo of Flies on that album?
Yep, it's the first song on the album. And then also he did some stuff. He hooked up with Al Jorgensen and did some songs on
Lard. Yeah, he did like Lard.
Yeah, he did Lard, which is a great band, great industrial metal band. And then also he did did some other stuff for Revolting Cocks also, which is another Al Jorgensen band.
He also did just a song with Sepultura as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know Sepultura. He did a song with Sepultura, and then he collaborated with Ice-T on the Body Count Freedom of Speech one after the Cop Killer song had to get pulled. He replaced it with a new song called Freedom of Speech that Jello co-wrote with him.
So, what would you say your favorite Dead Kennedys album is?
As a full album, I gotta go Bedtime for Democracy. But that, I don't know. I love Frankenchrist as much. I've actually worn out my original cassettes of both of those, of both Frankenchrist and Bedtime for Democracy. I really don't know if I had to choose one. Dustin, back me up. Those are two both awesome albums.
Oh, yeah. Those are really good albums.
Well, they're not my favorite. I mean, I love some of Frankenchrist. I love Soup is Good Food. It's probably my favorite Dead Kennedy song.
I really like Stars and Stripes Corruption.
But my favorite album would probably be Plastic Surgery Disaster.
See, that one's too, and I know this is going to sound hipster of me, it's too unproduced. It sounds too garage bandy.
Well, it was the first...
I liked the stuff after they really started having a good sound, and they didn't sound like a bunch of guys just in a garage making some cool music.
Well, it was the first album of theirs I had, and it was on cassette, and it wasn't even the right cassette. Somebody had recorded it over another tape. So it sounded awful, and I loved it.
Now that...
Did you guys...
That is DIY.
Did you guys ever see what they did back in the 80s with the In God Incorporated LP or EP? If you bought it on cassette, there was a little disclaimer. Because, you know, an EP has only got four or five songs on it, so they were able to get it all on one side. So the other side said... Home taping is killing the recording industry. We've intentionally left this side blank so we can do our part.
That's awesome.
And I thought, that's ballsy to do that.
Well, later when I bought Plastic Surgery Disaster on CD, it had In God on it.
I actually have the LP of just In God We Trust Incorporated. Separately, I've got the LP for Bedtime for Democracy. I think I've got the LPs for all of them. Except Plastic Surgery. I know I've got Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, and I've even got a couple of his spoken word ones on LP as well.
All right, Kevin, how about you? What would you say you like your favorite Dead Kennedys are, since we're on Dead Kennedys?
I honestly am only familiar with their more popular stuff, so I don't really have a favorite album of the Dead Kennedys. I like them. And I like the stuff that Josh plays at the end of his Radiodrome episode, so I probably should listen to more, but I'm really not that familiar with them.
The thing I do with those radio drums, I really try and throw an eclectic mix of crap no one's heard. Or you know, and I know how bad that makes me sound, how elitist, but you wouldn't believe how many people email me because I don't announce what they are and I don't tell people what those songs are, Kevin. You wouldn't believe how many people email me every week going, "Oh my God, that was awesome. Who is it?"
I just remember this.
It makes me feel good, you know?
I was just listening to some of those earlier drone episodes. I've been going back. I'm up to 25 now, by the way, John. Okay. As of this airing. But I was listening because you have some Dead Kennedy stuff on the. I mean, obviously Jello's voice is very distinctive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I recognize them right away. And I'm like, it sounds just as good as anything else I've heard of them. So I really should dig out the discography and just, you know, go through it all. And I listened to Horses today the entirety. Not a Dead Kennedy song. That was your 25th episode one.
Wait, you played Horses?
The Patti Smith song?
Yeah.
I love that song. Alex didn't believe me. Alex, you should tell him the story about how I explained to Alex what that song was about. And he's like, no. And because the song's about a male kid, getting gang raped in school. And during the rape, going inside his own head to a land of horses. Where, you know, he can escape the rape. And Alex is like, no. Then he listens to it. So, like, almost exactly 8 minutes later, oh, my God, it was about rape.
Yeah, we used that for
the
ending song on our My Little Pony episode.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but you didn't believe me that it was really about a kid getting
raped. No, I thought this is getting raped by horses.
I'm just saying I really like the stuff at the end of your Radiodrome episode, Josh. Like everybody else who emails you, but.
Just wait. There's some stuff you probably won't like. I've used Motley Crue a few times and Wasp and stuff like that. So there's some stuff you might not like.
Hey, you used Andrew WK a week or two ago, and I like that.
I actually, Andrew WK is awesome. You sent me actually had the songs on them.
Yeah, because that's my personal, so I can keep track of list.
I was just looking through. Some of it seems you have some interesting covers in here from what I was looking at.
Like what?
What was the one that I saw?
Do you have the list pulled up?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which one it is that I saw that I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice. I can't.
That's exactly what I'm going for. Interesting.
Ring of Fire. I didn't even know Wall of Voodoo covered Ring of Fire.
They actually used that song in the porno Night Dreams during the double cowgirl speak in synchronicity at the fireplace eating scene.
Ah.
It's all done to that version of the song.
Oh, yeah, Gen X doing Kiss Me Deadly.
Yep. Early Billy Idol.
It's like, again, I did not even know, because the only... I like Real Big Fish's cover of Kiss Me Deadly, so I'm actually quite fond of that song, but I'm like, Gen X doing it. That'd be pretty cool.
The Gen X is the original.
Oh, it's the original song. Lita Ford did not... Okay.
Lita Ford's Kiss Me Deadly is a totally different song.
Oh, okay.
They just happen to have the same title. It's not the same song whatsoever. Have you seen SLC Punk?
No, yes. I need to, though.
Okay.
Charlie keeps telling me I have to see that.
No, that's a great movie.
The Gen X Kiss Me Deadly is the song that plays at the climactic moment of the ending. Without ruining anything, that's what it'll, you know, you'll know it when it starts, wouldn't you say, Dustin?
Yeah, yeah. But that's probably Matthew Lillard's best role.
Oh, Matthew Lillard was so awesome in that movie.
Yeah, that was...
I am the future! I am the future of this great nation! Giant mohawk jumping up and down on the floor.
All sorts of bands I like on here. Stooges, Specials, Ramones, Gen X, Blondie, Velvet Underground.
Blondie?
English Beat cover.
Oh, okay. I'm a Blondie fan. I got a bunch of Blondie albums.
Minor Threat.
We're talking Debbie Harry Blondie, right?
Yes.
Is there another one? Unless we're talking the comic strip.
No, that's why I was confused. I'm like, are we talking the same
Blondie? Or the brownie that's white cake.
my wife can't stand Heart of Glass. She likes Blondie, but that song every time makes her go, bleh.
I hate that song too, but I love Call Me. That used to be my karaoke song.
By the way, am I the only person who hates Fugazi?
Follow-up
to Minor Threat.
I liked them in high school. I haven't heard them since, so I'm gonna give a I used to like them.
I don't know, I took a history of punk rock class in college, and we kind of went through all the different eras, and I'm like, oh, Minor Threat's pretty damn awesome, and it's like, here's Fugazi. This is what Ian McKay did afterwards. I'm like, these guys suck. What the hell happened?
Well, have you guys heard, have you ever heard the Agnostic Front song Gotta Go?
Yep.
I don't think so. I know Agnostic Front, but I don't know if I've heard that song.
Okay, well, because to do what I'm about to tell you, you have to be familiar with the original. So YouTube the original song first, and then YouTube Austrian Death Machine's cover of Gotta Go. It is hilarious. but it only makes sense if you're familiar with the original.
All right, I'll have to look that up. I just saw that Minor Threat song, that SLP funk. I'm like, God damn, I hate Fugazi.
Well, see, my problem with Minor Threat was always I liked the music, but the guys were such pretentious assholes, really.
Well, in their defense, they were like 16 and 17 when they were making this.
No, I'm talking now. There was a documentary.
Oh, now. Well, yeah.
A couple of years ago, and they're such arrogant, you know, uber liberal douchebags that I don't know. They made me lose respect for their music somewhat.
A lot of the hardcore bands have that sort of politics. They may not have the attitude, but...
What do you guys think of the Bad Brains?
I like them.
I've heard, I like. And again, I'm not super familiar with them other than a couple of songs, but...
Well, all right. What do you guys think of the whole going from hardcore songs like Pay to Come to the outright, not even hiding it, reggae stuff that they would do on the same album?
Oh, hey.
I actually don't mind that, because I know that it's not exceptionally uncommon. I mean, I'm talking early Boss Tone stuff, like early Boss Tone stuff was like that. And a lot of the bands from that area had that. And honestly, the punk and reggae thing, that dates back all the way to England and like the Clash and the communities, because the punk community crossed over with the reggae community pretty heavily. That's where you get second wave ska from.
And see, okay, you just brought up like the Clash. That's one. Now, I'm not one to constantly categorize, oh, that's not punk, but it's called punk and things like that. I am just sick of hearing the Clash called an early punk band.
Me too.
Their first album is White Riot. It's definitely a punk song.
But they're not punk. I mean, you know, here's IFC doing an entire month on punk rock last year, and they're showing the Clash doing Rock the Casbah, Rockin'
the
Casbah.
That was
a
new wave.
And I'm like, that's not punk!
Wave album.
It's like, that's not punk!
Well, yeah, that album is. I'm just saying their first album is, though.
And I just, you know, always had this problem with them being put in the same category as the Sex Pistols and Black Flag. It's just, no, they're not. They're fine musicians, but they're not in the same category as the Pistols and Flag.
No, they're not. You know, should I stay or should I go now is not punk.
No.
Again, that's combat rock. Combat rock was a new wave album.
All right, what do you guys think about the overproduced but yet still absolutely awesome stuff that was put out in the early 90s by rock bands like Meatloaf?
Because
maybe I'm gay. I think I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That is a great song. Maybe I just came out of the closet. I don't know.
Well, I like
Bat of the Hell's awesome.
I like all the stuff that, what's his name? Steinem?
Yep.
I like all the stuff he did. He did that one musical with Andrew Lloyd Webber, which is like the only Andrew Lloyd Webber I'll listen to.
He also did all the original songs for the 1984 Streets of Fire movie with hot as hell midriff showing shirt hanging off the shoulder Diane Lane as Ellen Aim and Ellen Aim and the Attackers.
Oh.
Okay, right now, and you don't have to include this in the episode, go, all three of you, YouTube the trailer for Streets of Fire. And you tell me that song, all the music in that, you don't immediately go, I could hear Meatloaf singing this right now.
Let's see, Streets of Fire, theatrical trailer.
Actually, you can actually buy the movie on YouTube for $3.
And I'll be coming for you, too.
Sure you will. And I'll be waiting.
You are about to enter a world
this
unlike
does sound
any
Meatloaf-y.
You've ever seen before. Where rock and roll is king. The only law is a loaded gun. Where the beautiful.
Stay and see the show, it's really good.
The brutal.
I want Tom Cody.
And the brave all meet.
From now on, it's for real.
In Streets of Fire.
You're lying in your bed and on a Saturday night. You're sweating buckets and it's not even hard. But your brain has got the message and it's sending it out.
It's kind of awesome.
Holy sh**, is that Rick Moranis?
It is. Ed Begley Jr. is the bum, too.
This sounds exactly like a Meatloaf song, and Michael Pear looks exactly like William Dafoe.
Yeah.
Except Willem Dafoe is the villain.
Oh, that's probably why it looks like Willem Dafoe then.
Yeah, because it is Willem Dafoe, you idiot. Michael Pere is the hero. Oh, you have to leave that in because that was gold, Alex.
This sounds...
Definitely good.
Oh, there was Rick Moranis again.
By the way, one of the villains' henchmen is Lee Ving of Fear.
Now, from the creators of 48 Hours, Universal Pictures presents Michael Pere, Diane Lane, Rick Moranis, and Amy Madigan in a Walter
and Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, he doesn't even get...
No, Willem Dafoe is nobody in this movie. This was one of the films that made him a star.
It's also got Bill Paxton in it. It's directed by Walter Hill.
Yeah.
It's the Warriors guy.
Yeah.
And the movie was a massive, massive flop. The movie was a horrendously bad flop, too.
Well, Walter,
it lost a ton of money, but that song, that Going Nowhere Fast.
That song was catchy. I want to listen to it.
I've actually played it on Radiodrome. I'll send you guys the raw file. It's actually taken from the movie, so there's a sound of a motorcycle knocking down a door. But I'll send you guys all the song when we're done. But cool. But Meatloaf actually does that song live. He's never recorded that version, but Meatloaf does that live because Jim Steinman wrote all of Ellen Aim and the Attackers' music in this. And you want to know something even weirder? In The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, one of the bands that Julian Grendel is stealing from is Ellen Aim and the Attackers.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because both movies were produced by Joel Silver, so there you go. The walking movie Wikipedia strikes again.
But there was that musical that Steinman did with Andrew Lloyd Webber. What was it? Whistle Down the Wind, I think, based off of the Haley Mills movie.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Meatloaf did a couple songs from it on his own.
Well, I think what most people remember most about Meatloaf is that Michael Bay directed I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That, the music video. And you can tell it's Michael Bay because within the first 4 seconds, there's a shot of a helicopter silhouetted against a sunset.
And there's probably an explosion somewhere in that 20-minute video.
The video's 12 minutes, so don't exaggerate.
That's not much of an exaggeration.
You're still 8 minutes off. It's
totally worth watching.
Considering
I actually have it on Laserdisc. I have Bad Outta Hell 2, the video album on Laserdisc. So screw you.
I liked that album, though. That was a good album. Somebody gave me
for my birthday.
He wrote
Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's another awesome song.
Yeah, he did that one.
I actually like Total Eclipse of the Heart, too. The Bonnie Taylor, she's goes all... I mean, you'd swear that video was directed by Dario Argento.
That video was one of the
I'm serious.
Worst. Oh, it's one of the... Oh, I hate the video for that song.
But here's the thing. I've always thought that song, it always made me think of Planet of the Apes. Because she keeps talking about bright eyes. And remember, that's what Zira called Taylor. So I always just... Somebody needs to make a mashup video of scenes from Planet of the Apes with Zira and Taylor to the Bonnie Taylor song. I think that would be perfect.
Max Turn Weinberg around. Played drums on Total Eclipse of the Heart. Did not know that.
Turn around, bright eyes.
Brian Adams backing vocals.
Really? They even got some Canada on that?
Rick Derringer on guitar.
Well, okay. Do you guys remember early Night Court episodes before Christine was the defense attorney? Do you remember that Billy, the other blonde chick before Christine came on board Night Court?
I'll be honest with you, Josh. I've only seen two episodes of Night Court that I had on a $5 DVD. It was the first episode and the last episode.
The last episode was the first episode wasn't bad. But okay, Dustin,
I have not
Kevin.
Seen Night Court, but after hearing you talk about Androme, I actually want to see it.
Dustin?
I'm in the same situation as
okay,
Kevin.
Well, the actress that played Billy for an entire season on that, she is actually the person that recorded the female side of the vocals on Paradise by the Dashboard Lights by Meatloaf.
Ah!
That's actually what she did before she became an actress. So she's the voice on Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. But she's not the person singing it in the music video version. She's just the voice on the album version.
No, if Charlie were here, he'd tell you about karaoke for Paradise and the Dashboard Light.
I like that song, too.
It'd be one of those songs where couples would come up and put it there, and he'd be like, yes, I get a smoke break.
Hey, back when I used to work in radio, what we used to have a term that we called it freebirding. When you had to take a shit, that's when you put on Freebird or November Rain or I'd Do Anything for Love or, you know, whatever kind of station you take the 10-minute plus song. So even today, we joke around, people that used to work in radio, instead of saying I gotta go take a dump, you go I gotta go Freebird, and everybody knows what you're talking about. It's sort of this weird slang that you get when you've worked in real radio.
And
I'm pretty sure they put Shout on First Wave when they want to go take a sh**, because that song's about 7.5 minutes long.
And if you've been eating Fazoli's, you're going to have to put on Inagata De Vita.
Yeah, Inagata De Vita, you need to throw that on for the... Or if you were a metal station, you could have thrown on Venom's At War With Satan. That song's only 19 minutes long. Took up the entire side of the cassette was one song.
You guys familiar with the Mars Volta?
Yes, very much. I like him.
When Francis the Mute first came out,
which is their best album,
on they had still had a station in Los Angeles, Indie 103, 1.1, I believe it was. And they go, here's the first half of the Mars Volta album. And they play, they played half the album right up before Cassandra Gemini. They didn't play, because that's the other half of the album. They played the first three songs off the album.
Do you guys remember that Cheech and Chong sketch, College Radio, where they played like, it's the Grateful Dead live in Maui, Waui, man, hour 47. we had a station that used to do that. We still have it on Sunday nights from like 3 till 5 a.m. They call it Side 2. That's the name of the show. They play the entire B-side of an album. And I think that's kind of neat, actually.
It is cool. If my aunt is listening, she's going to be disappointed. I really do not like The Grateful Dead. Sorry. Sorry, Aunt Lisa.
I would like...
Yeah, well, I Scott accuses me of being a hippie, and the only song I like from them is their cover with Bob Dylan of Knocking on Heaven's Door, so I'm not a Dead fan either.
Well, there's a radio show I used to listen to every week that I loved, and I've never been able to listen to it again, and even find archived episodes of it. Dr. Demento.
Oh, yeah, Demento, yeah.
Demento's still on the air.
Yeah, I want to listen to him.
He's syndicated. XM. Well, no, he's syndicated on over-the-air stations, so...
Yeah, I listened to him in syndication, and I discovered a lot of great, fun music on that show.
He's still... I used to have the tape player and the CD player in my car were broken at one point, so I'd be driving back from Green Bay when I worked at the TV station, and all I had was radio. So I'd run across Demento on, like, late Sunday nights. A local station was still playing new Dr. Demento's.
I listened to it every Sunday night. I would just record it. I'd put in a tape and listen to it and record it, turn the tape over when it was over, and I just had a bunch of cassette tapes of Dr. Demento.
I used to do that with a syndicated heavy metal show called The Metal Shop that was done in the late 80s. I used to do that. We used to record The Metal Shop, another syndicated radio show.
You can stream Demento's stuff from his website, Jowski.
Oh my gosh, I am
so... And you can get all of his archives from 92 to present, and a few select archives from the early 70s.
I'll send it to you after the show also. I have Halloween 1984, where he had Elvira on, where he and her are joking around and she plays her trick-or-treat song. I'll send that to you guys when the show's over, too.
I used to have, like 25th or 30th anniversary... that he did on Laserdisc of all the videos. It had videos for Weird Al, I Lost on Jeopardy, that I shot the somebody shot the Prom Queen song, video for Fish Heads, of course.
Well, you want to talk about cool, and this is something that you'd never see today, probably just due to music rights or YouTube, but I've got a Laserdisc called Music Videos Uncut Volume 1. I don't know if they had further volumes after this, but it was songs by like Helix and SSQ and Queen and they're Frankie Goes to Hollywood and stuff like that. The music videos MTV wouldn't play, all music videos that had tits and ass in them.
Haha.
So I've got a Laserdisc full of sexual music videos that MTV refused to play. Now that's a time capsule of a very specific period in music video history.
Well, when there were music videos.
They still have music videos. They don't have the impact.
You gotta go
to YouTube,
to watch them.
Yeah.
They're pretty much just on YouTube. Almost every single new music video I've seen has been on YouTube. That somebody's, hey, you know, such and such band, you know, Lesbian Bed Death has got a new music video out. It's like, oh, now you're never going to see that on Much Music or, you know, for Dustin or... VH1 Classic or anything here.
Especially nowadays, since Much Music doesn't play any music anymore.
Oh,
and then
so much Music turned into MTV, Dustin?
Yeah, and Much
Pretty
More
much
Music.
Anything but music.
And Much More Music, which was their second music channel, pretty much turned into VH1.
The same thing happened with MTV. We had MTV and then they stopped playing music videos, so they created MTV2, which was all music videos. Then that stopped playing music videos, and now they're talking about creating another all music video station of MTV3. And in four years, that's not going to have music videos.
They have an MTV3. It's called MTV Trace.
I don't get that one.
They play all like Hispanic music, don't
yeah,
they?
It's all it is. I'm like, oh look, they're showing music videos that are all in Spanish. But I'm like, but at least it's music videos.
Well, VH1 Classic used to be all music videos too, and now I can understand if they want to show a movie like, you know, the Mark Wahlberg rock star or Eat the Rich. Now they're just showing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's just terrible.
Yeah, because that's what I want to watch on VH1 Classic, Spider-Man or The Matrix.
There was a period at least.
Those are music video classics, Josh. Don't...
There was a time where VH1 Classic, I mean, they weren't showing music videos, but I could watch The Wall and Quadrophenia over and over again. But The Matrix and Spider-Man?
Did they make you sit
through Tommy,
though?
They're showing non-music movies.
Are they another station that the VH, the letters don't actually stand for anything anymore? Because it used to be Video Hits.
Yeah, Video Hits 1. Because, see, I've read two different books on the history of MTV, so I'm very well versed in how these channels started and what happened to them. Just like, you guys are all too young to remember this firsthand, but did you guys know that Ted Turner started his own all-music station to compete with MTV at one point?
What did they call it?
I don't remember off the top of my head because it only lasted 3 months. It went out of business in 3 months. Because Ted Turner took the stance, MTV is filthy, it's all depravity and sex. My station will be all wholesome. Yeah, you can tell no one watched that.
Was it the... Wait, no, those stations are still on. The like, country music television?
Yeah. No, it wasn't. Well, CMT doesn't even show videos anymore.
Yeah, you know what they show? Wife Swap.
Okay, you guys want to hear something up? I read this in an interview with Joe Bob Briggs. They tried to bring Monster Vision back 2 or 3 years ago. Country Music Television owns the rights to Monster Vision. They wanted Bob to come back to host horror movies on CMT. And he said they created a pilot. And it was awful because they gave him 2 weeks and only $20,000. And they said, give us 4 hours of content.
Oh,
and
God.
He couldn't do it. And it's never aired. But just the thought, country music television, that's where I want to watch a horror movie.
Well,
no, I can see. Well, but
Chainsaw Massacre.
The one thing I can see, Joe Bob Briggs, that character, is kind of like a country bumpkin. Okay, I kind of see it from that perspective.
Yeah, but
that character would fit. That show does not.
Hills Have Eyes. There's some country-based horror films out there.
Oh, there's plenty of Hicksploitation.
Yeah.
This is the same CMT that in their early days when they changed to CMT showed Star Trek The Next Generation. You know, that big country show.
Oh, that's right. Didn't they show ECW wrestling or something, too?
Yeah, they used to have wrestling, and they used to have Star Trek Next Gen. That was the early days of channels not caring.
Oh, God.
But you know why they do that nowadays, though? To trick DVRs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, okay, they've done that all along. I have the six-hour Elvira M... Or, sorry. The six-hour 1984 Elvira MTV Halloween special. She showed 4 hours of music videos, two in the front, two in the back, and then she showed Night of the Living Dead on Halloween night. Well, Night of the Living Dead doesn't qualify for MTV. No, but you can kind of see, in a weird way, that does kind of fit on Halloween night in 1984, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
weird way, you can go, yeah, Night of the Living Dead's got nothing to do with music, but Elvira's hosting and she's shown 4 hours of music videos. You know, a movie like that's okay. I still have my dad recorded the premiere of The Wall on MTV with all the promos and everything. I love it. I love
that's
that
badass.
Part. Hey, another thing, I'm going to be Skyping you guys so much stuff. I have almost 200 MTV promos on my computer.
Oh.
Those will bring you back in time, man. I'll Skype all... none of you guys log off when we're done.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Skype all that shit to you guys.
No, but yeah, MTV, they died.
Well, you know what's the real tragic? thing, even though we're way off topic from where we're supposed to be.
Well, technically we are music.
No, we're still on topic.
We're tangentially on topic.
Well, I mean, this show never stays fully on topic. And my whole idea with the music thing was to kind of talk, because we kind of have diverse tastes in music. And, you know, occasionally we get people complain when we mention, like, a rap artist or something like that on the radio show. And it's just like, well, music is, you can be geeky about music. It fits the theme of the show. And there's nothing wrong with, because we all like different things, and that's okay.
Well, no. But, we're way over our time, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Right. So we are over our time.
We do have to edit out like some of that, except for the part where Jowski's like, huh, he looks a lot like Willem Dafoe.
No, we're keeping
that. Is Willem Dafoe. Yeah, because that is one of your best dumbass moments yet, Jowski.
Put that right at the beginning.
just end the show.
All right. Yes, we're going to end the show. check out our website, www.geekjuicemedia.com. For Kevin, Dustin, and Josh, and I'm Alex Jowski. Stay tuned for the projection booth.